When we think about our mothers on a weekend like this, we often think about things we learned from them. Yesterday, I came across a list that someone had compiled that goes like this. My mother taught me about genetics. How many times she said to me, "You're just like your father." My mother taught me about religion. "You better pray that comes out of the carpet." My mother taught me about logic. She would say, "Because I said so, that's why." My mother taught me about irony. "Keep crying and I'll give you something to cry about." My mother taught me about the science of osmosis. "Shut your mouth and eat your supper." My mother taught me about anticipation. "Just wait till your father gets home." My mother taught me about receiving. "You're going to get it when we get home." My mother taught me how to meet a challenge. "What were you thinking? Answer me when I talk to you and don't talk back to me." My mother taught me humor. "When that lawnmower cuts off your toes, don't come running to me." My mother taught me how to be a contortionist. "Would you just look at that dirt on the back of your neck?" My mother taught me about appreciating a job well done. "If you kids are going to kill each other, do it outside because I just finished cleaning." My mother taught me about time travel. "If you don't straighten up, I'm going to put you in the middle of next week." My mother taught me about my roots. "What, do you think you were born in a barn?" That's usually when they look in your room. And last but not least, my mother taught me about justice. "One day you'll have kids, and I hope they turn out just like you." So, you know, it's a little humor, but, you know, there is a serious side to thinking about what our mothers have taught us as well. My mother died far too prematurely at only age 48. And although this August will mark 30 years since she died, I still find myself, as I did yesterday for some time, thinking about her influence on my life, because it still remains to this day. Now, I suppose you could think that this is a sermon leading in to a message about mothers, and you would be partly right. You would be partly right. It's going to be more about children, though. It's about mothering, but it's also about fathering, and it's about grandmothering and grandfathering. And it's also about uncling and aunting and friending and mentoring and just generally anybody who is any kind of influence on children. In other words, it will pretty much apply to everyone in here to some degree or another, and I believe that for those who have ears to hear, every one of us, whether we have children or not, can benefit from it, and in some spiritual ways as well, because in that sense, we are all children. We're all God's children, and we are all in a process of growing up spiritually, even long after we are grown physically. This is about a sermon today about training up a child in the way that he should go, to quote the proverb. But whoever you are and whatever you are, whether you're a mother, a father, or a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, it will help you to be a better influence. A few months ago, I gave a sermon on discernment that you may recall. And in that sermon, talked about knowledge and understanding and wisdom under the overall umbrella of how those three things work together to build a quality in a human being called discernment. I have a question for you today, though, specifically along that line. When you look at your children or grandchildren or even other people's kids or the children that you would like to have someday, and you see their lives unfolding ahead of them, where do you see that your child needs or will need wisdom and discernment? Where do you see your child or that child will need wisdom and discernment? Now, you can answer that broadly in terms of issues that affect all children, such as societal trends. Since they all live in the same world, they will all need wisdom in that way. Or you may answer that, if you have children, very specifically for individual children. For example, knowing their personality, knowing their character and where they are and other traits in this life, what kind of things do you look down the road and you say, well, I know my child this way and they're going to need some wisdom and discernment in this area or that area? You may not be able to answer that question immediately, and I'm not expecting an answer immediately. What I wanted to do was pose the question for you to carry with you, because it's a question well worth pondering. And once you form some answers to that question, that leads to another question. What is your plan for helping them develop that knowledge and understanding and wisdom? What's the plan? What is your teaching plan? Now somebody, and I don't think really anybody does this, although I've wondered from time to time about some situations, somebody might have the philosophy, well, I'll just bring them to church. That's where they'll get that stuff. I'll have them in Sabbath school. I'll send them to camp. We have programs that are really good. But relatively speaking, they are, first of all, they are not the primary molder and shaper of a child's mind. You ever think about how much time kids might even spend under an ideal circumstance in Sabbath school in a year? I did a little calculation. If we had in a year 16 classes for a child, and that's more than once a month, and they were a half hour long, and they had perfect attendance, they could have in a year 8 hours of Sabbath school. Double it if you want to. 16 hours. That's not much. That's not much. It may be 8 good hours, but it's only 8 hours. Do you know how many hours there are in a year? In a year, there are 8,760 hours. That means the Sabbath school teachers would have them less for 1/1,000th of the year. The rest of the time, they were the responsibility of other people. School teachers, coaches, music teachers, neighbors, friends, the pals that they have on the street. Worst of all, the computer or the television or even themselves if they are left alone. But, you know, it's not the responsibility of any of those other people to teach them the things of God. Teaching a child the things of God falls primarily on the shoulders of the parents. We have said for years that we work hard to have educational programs in the church that are effective. But also, we've said that those are supplemental. They supplement. They do not take the place of parents teaching children the things of God. And that's because one of the greatest responsibilities in parenting is teaching. Teaching that prepares the pupil, your child, to live successfully in their relationships with God and one another. God stresses this throughout the Bible. You cannot get away from the stress that is laid in the Bible on this. If you look up the following words in a concordance and count how many times they are used, I'm not going to give the numbers here, but just look up the words teach, teachers, learn, learning, understand, understanding, knowledge, discern, judgment, and perceive. If you look up those words, you will find over 900 references in the Bible to issues that involve developing the mind and the thinking patterns and the behavior of people. All of those words deal with developing the mind and the thinking patterns and the behavior of people. And in those references are some very strong, powerful statements from God and His servants. And it emphasizes, or they emphasize, the necessity that God lays on teaching. God is a teacher. He is the teacher, the great teacher. But He also models how teaching is supposed to work, too, in a family by illustrating how He wants it to work in His own family. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 4. In Deuteronomy 4, I'm giving some scriptures here to lay a little background to what we will specifically be involved in. Deuteronomy 4, verse 1. Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I teach you to observe, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers is giving you. Now, today we are spiritual Israel, and the land that God is giving us is the kingdom of God. But His statutes and His judgments, His way of life has not changed from back then. These things are key to our character development and the opportunity to go in and possess it. As Moses was speaking this to them, he was speaking to adults primarily. But he was assuming nothing. I'll talk a little bit later about assuming things. Moses was assuming nothing, even though he was speaking to adults. And as we will see later in the book of Proverbs, this sounds almost exactly like a father speaking to his son, as we will read in the book of Proverbs. O Israel, listen to the statutes and judgments which I teach you to observe, so that, and there always has to be the question answered, what is it for? What is it for? Mr. Register, and when he was over the education programs, always used to ask the so that question. We do this, why? So that? And it's actually drawn from Scripture, because God always gives reasons. And the reason He gives here for learning the statutes and the judgments is so that we can do what we need to do to possess the land which God has given us. In verse 9, He then goes on to say, only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and your grandchildren. Moses said, I am teaching you. You teach them to your children and grandchildren, especially concerning the day you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said to me, gather the people to me, and I will let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me. There, that word, then again, that. Gather them here, hear my words. Why? That, so that they may learn to fear me all the days of their that they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children. The responsibility is laid on the parents. Teach the children. This is critically important. Now we come to chapter 6 of Deuteronomy, chapter 6, and verse 6. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. It's not on the page of the paper, not on the blackboard. It's got to move from the page and from the blackboard to the heart. In other words, it has to be internalized. When they're in your heart, verse 7, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. Now, we just heard in the sermonette about simply talking among ourselves on a spiritual level at Sabbath services. Well, for a parent, we really have to be applying those points we heard about thinking ahead of time. It really dovetailed nicely into what I'm going to be saying here today about pre-planning. What is the plan? What is the plan for talking about these things and teaching them diligently? First, they have to be internalized, verse 6, and then they consciously have to be passed on. Verse 7 does not imply a casual approach. The word diligently implies something much stronger. Clark's commentary on that word diligently said in the Hebrew, it means to repeat, to iterate, or to do a thing again and again. Hence, to whet or sharpen any instrument, which is done by reiterated friction or grinding. When it says whet, it's W-H-E-T, like using the whetstone to sharpen the instrument. You keep running that knife blade over the whetstone until it is honed very sharp. And it goes on to say, God's testimonies must be taught to our children, and the utmost diligence must be used to make them understand them, to seek to get inside the child's mind so that they understand. What's your plan? What's the plan? I have sometimes watched parents, sometimes in the same family, take very different approaches toward this. Some are very diligent in preparing to teach, and others don't seem to give a whole lot of thought, but just sort of take situations as they come and sort of react, or maybe not react, to the situation. But you read this and you get the very keen sense that God is telling every parent, hey, I need to be very diligent about talking of these things and instructing them. And every situation, life is the classroom. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Let's see, what's not covered there? It's sort of like a 24-hour-a-day classroom. Being ready and planning this. That is so critically important. Now, there's a statement that the prophet Samuel made, a very interesting statement in terms of his awareness of his responsibility that was similar to Moses. Now, Samuel's statement was not in the context of parenting, but it illustrates something that he understood about leadership. And in that sense, it is a parenting principle, as parents are the leaders of the family. You can be turning to 1 Samuel chapter 12. 1 Samuel 12 and verse 23. 1 Samuel 12, 23. Samuel said, "Moreover, as for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you. But I will teach you the good and the right way." Now, the people, to give a little context here, the people had sinned in asking for a king. It was an unwise, foolish step, but the group thinking created a mass movement, and you know, this is a great story illustrating that majority thought is not always right, because the majority thinking here in Israel, once again, was not right. And it's not always wise. And individually, the same thing is true. Any human needs to be on guard against their thoughts, because, you know, again, that's in the Proverbs, there's a way that seems right to a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death. We think in a lot of different ways, and they're not all right. And so, as humans, we need to be always concerning ourselves about this. And we all, as human beings, are also in need of being taught. We're all constantly learning. But he goes on to say here, in that context then, "Far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord in ceasing to pray for you." What an interesting statement. It would be a sin against God if I stopped praying for you. That's a very strong statement. He makes two important statements here, and that's the first one. When it comes to our children, it would be a sin against the Lord not to pray for them, because they are His creation. They belong to Him. We have the responsibility of caring for them, nurturing them, bringing them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Not praying for them would essentially be a statement to God that we are ignoring God. That's a sin, to ignore and diminish God. It would be a sin to ignore the one whose guidance we need the most for them, and the ones whom He has allowed us to bring into this world in His image for the express purpose of being in His eternal family. It would be gross negligence, you might say, would be the sin. So that's the statement that's first made. And then Samuel said, "But I will teach you the good and the right way." In addition to praying, because that's not the only thing we should do for our kids. We can't just pray for them, although that is primary. Then we have to step in and act. There has to be teaching. I will teach. The principle to pull from this verse concerning our children, if we're going to lead our children as Samuel was leading Israel, is that the basis, the foundational basis for good child rearing is prayer and teaching. Prayer and teaching. our relationship with God, seeking guidance from God, and then teaching them. Just as Moses said, diligently teaching. And Samuel told the nation, I will teach you. I will teach you the good and the right way. How important is that? Actually, when you go to verse 24, he immediately began, because the next two verses are teaching. He said in verse 24, only fear the Lord and serve him in truth with all your heart, for consider what great things he has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, you shall be swept away, both you and your king. He said, I will teach you. And immediately he stepped in and started teaching. Fear the Lord. Where did we read that? In what Moses said. Serve him in truth. Well, that's just the beginning. What is truth? They needed to understand that. With all your heart, consider. Stop. Think. Spend time on considering what great things he has done. Verse 25, embedded in verse 25, is a basic principle for effective teaching as well. In verse 25, it's important to see what is said, but it's also important to understand a principle about teaching. And that is the principle of foretelling the future. The principle of cause and effect. This is something that is so important to helping a child develop wisdom. We want our children not only to have knowledge, and that's where they're going to get a lot of knowledge, is in school, in their formal education. But who can teach them wisdom? Wisdom comes from things like this, from thinking ahead, using what you could call prophetic teaching. That may be a poor word to use for it, but let me illustrate it like this. In 2009, I was teaching a class on the book of Proverbs at the winter weekend. And I told them in that class that I thought about having an entire class titled Understanding Proverbs as Prophecy. Understanding Proverbs as Prophecy. Now, I didn't mean in the sense of predicting what's going to happen to Europe, what's going on in modern Israel today as it faces its decline, what's going to happen in the world tomorrow, but understanding Proverbs, how they are built, on predicting what will happen in tomorrow's consequences based on today's actions. Many of the Proverbs deal with, if you do this today, this is what's going to happen tomorrow. And in that sense, it's foretelling the future. But underlying that is the principle of teaching cause and effect. And when a person understands cause and effect, when they are able to look at life and begin to think in terms of, look, if I do this, that's going to happen. If I do that, the other thing's going to happen. They are learning how to think wisely. They're not thinking in terms of knowledge, fact gathering, they're thinking in terms of understanding the future. How many times are the words will and shall used in the book of Proverbs? Well, it's some 200 times in the book of Proverbs. And in the vast majority of those cases, only a very few verses are exceptions, it uses the words to forecast what will happen based on certain actions. And it's both positive and negative. If you do this, this will happen. And it can be good, it can be bad. It approaches all things in life. It helps a person begin to think. But what it is doing is helping them begin to think. Effective teaching is that which explains consequences. We can tell our kids, do this, don't do that. But equally important is to teach them and to bring them into the thinking process. Not just teaching them what to do and what not to do, but why to do it. It's probably more important to teach them why to do it and why not to do it than it is to teach them what to do. Some call it critical thinking. Some call it fluid intelligence. It's not the whole of critical thinking, and it's not everything that fluid intelligence means, but it is an aspect of each. It is applying that aspect here to mean instilling in the person the habit of thinking through things in advance and understanding that choices lead to consequences. Choices lead to consequences. And when a child or as a child develops the mindset and the ability to stop and think, before I act on the choice that I have made, what will the consequence bring? What consequence will come? A much less formal word than fluid intelligence could simply be the then what approach, where a person asks themselves, I do this, then what? I do that, then what? When we think that way, it helps establish a pattern that leads to wise thinking. It's an approach to thinking. Another important teaching principle for parents is in Ezra chapter 7. Ezra 7 and verse 10. Ezra 7 and verse 10. For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach statutes and ordinances in Israel. That is no different. What Ezra was doing with the entire nation is no different from what a parent should be doing with their children. Three steps. Preparing the heart to seek, to do, to teach. Seeking and doing really are pre-qualifiers for teaching. And one of the pre-qualifiers for teaching others is to be taught ourselves. Now, seeking, that's where seeking comes in. Seeking was the process of being taught himself. So Ezra prepared his heart. He thought about this. His attitude was such that he was humble. He wanted to learn. He wanted to know. But he sought himself to learn from the law of the Lord. That has to be there first. One of the dominant thoughts in the book of Psalms is, teach me. Teach me. We see that often. Maybe a good examination of our prayer life is to ask ourselves, how often do I ask God to teach me? That's part of seeking the law of the Lord, seeking God. Now, parents have the added responsibility to seek not only the law of the God, but we also have to seek the knowledge of, okay, how do I teach this? I have what to teach, but I also need to know how to teach it. How to teach it in such a way that is going to be effective. Well, one of the most important ways to be effective and absolutely required to be effective is the second thing that Ezra has mentioned of him here. He prepared his heart, number one, to seek the law of the Lord, and number two, to do it. To do it. Doing gives credibility. Doing gives credibility. In other words, the pupil should not only have the instruction, they should have the example. The pupil must not only have instruction, they must have the example. It would have not done Ezra or Israel much good if Ezra said to the whole nation, this is what you do, and then he wasn't doing it himself. Example has to be there. That's why it is so important. As parents, we have an obligation on us. And actually, that's one of the beautiful things of having children. It makes you, you know, it puts a little pressure on you to do better, you know, yourself. Because you think, hey, it's not just for me. If I want to slack off in my life, well, and it affects nobody else, that's it. But when you think, man, you know, I can't be a stumbling block for my kids. Sometimes that very thought keeps us on the straight and narrow better than we might have been if we were left to our own devices. So that's not a bad thing. And then to teach. Seeking, always learning, seeking. Seeking the knowledge of what to teach, seeking the knowledge of how to teach it, doing it, and then teaching. We see another principle in Psalm 34. Psalm 34. Psalm verse 11. Psalm 34, 11. Come, you children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. Now, there are several things here. Now, first of all, I know it'll be pointed out, well, these are not literal children. He's talking to everybody. Of course. Of course he's talking to everybody. It applies to all of us kids. It applies to all of us kids. God's kids. But it does not exclude applying it to children either. The same thing is true of children. Come, children, listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord. So we could ask, this fear of the Lord that Moses talked about, that Samuel talked about, that David's talking about here, is that something that just sort of slips into somebody's life, that they just sort of pick up? David said it's taught. It's taught. We teach about the fear of the Lord. When it comes to children in particular, that has to be taught. It's a big enough challenge for humans, for adults to always capture the fear of the Lord and what that means. It's a lifelong study, actually. So for children, it has to be taught to them, and it's very necessary to teach it to them, according to what Moses said. Now he goes on. Who is the man who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Isn't that fundamentally what every parent wants for their kids? You know, I was a child of the baby boom years, as were many of you. And coming out of the Depression and coming out of World War II, what so many parents said back then was, I want it better for my child than it was for me. And so a lot of the emphasis got on the physical. Better house, better car, better toys, better education. All of the stuff that was physical. Every generation should want it better for their kids than it was for us. But when we come to the knowledge of God, we realize it's not about physical. If it's going to be better for them than it was for us, it's about a better understanding at an earlier age than I ever had. So he says this. He says in verse 12 what every parent wants. We want our kids to desire life and love many days and see good. If you want that, verse 13, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open to their cry. The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut the remembrance of them off from the earth. The righteous cry out, and the Lord hears, and delivers them out of all their troubles. Now David is speaking to all, but this should be a fundamental outline of your teacher's guide. As parents, this is simply a teacher's guide for parents. These could be the broad chapter headings in your child-rearing book. Right here. I need to teach my child control of the tongue, verse 13. Departing from evil, doing good, seeking peace, verse 14. Relationship with God, verses 15 through 17. Those are some of the big, broad areas that need to be taught to children. You can fill in the details then. Under those categories, control of the tongue, departing from evil, doing good, seeking peace. There is no end to teaching material there. The relationship with God, verses 15 through 17. The way that God works with humans. Huge, huge subjects. But if a parent is really tackling these throughout a child's life, by the time, let's say, around age 18, whenever they go out on their own, the child has had in the home a steady stream of teaching how life works in these ways. And more important, it is teaching combined with training. The teaching part is explaining. The training part is helping them act that way. The training deals with behavior. And all of that goes into parenting too. Teaching plus training. These are some very core concepts, but there are others that we're going to see as well. But the point is, when we read, "Come, children, I will teach you the fear of the Lord," it's an understanding for us that it must be taught. We cannot just hope that they catch it. Can't just hope they catch it. We have a responsibility to teach it. You teach that continually to a child, and by the time they're on their own, they're on their way. They're on their way to wisdom. They're on their way to accumulating wisdom. But it does take some skill. It takes some skill and understanding to know how to instill this in a child. How do I put that in my child's mind? And tactics change as children mature. As children change, our tactics, our approaches have to change. And we have to stay ahead of them. There's a prayer of Moses that is recorded in Psalm chapter 90, in which he said, "Teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom." Teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. I've always looked at that verse in terms of the whole context, which is really about aging. But you can also apply that. I could ask, have you ever thought of applying it in terms of parents numbering the days of their children? Parents numbering the days of their children. Well, it could apply this way, that we need to know the days of our children in order to understand the various stages of childhood development, so that we can reach their minds at age-appropriate levels. At age-appropriate levels. And not always having to play catch-up to where they are, but staying ahead of them by understanding when they get to this stage, this is how I will have to teach them how to react. So that part comes from applying, as Moses said in that psalm, "Teach us number our days that we may apply our heart to wisdom." In order for the parent to stay ahead of the child, we have to apply our heart to wisdom. And part of wisdom says, my child's going to be changing. How do I keep learning to stay ahead of them so that I can be prepared for the changes that they come to in life? So we can teach them at every stage how to fear the Lord. That takes wisdom, and it takes preparation to be prepared to teach. Now, with children, wisdom says that we should structure a learning environment. We have to structure a learning environment. Now, we also have to take advantage of the opportunities that just pop up in life, and they do every day. Opportunities arise in life continually that are teaching opportunities. So we can't structure everything in life. But apart from the things that just pop up, we do have a responsibility to structure a lot of what happens in life. You know, after I was grown and gone from home, my dad used to talk to me about life as it was. And he told me one day, he said, "You know, when you were 15 and 16, when you got into a stage of life, and you can't treat a 15-year-old like you treated them when they were 12. And when they're 12, you can't treat them like they were when they were 8, and so on." And he said, "I had to learn to deal with you in different ways." He said, "I knew I had to change my methods because you had changed. And if I used the same methods, it wouldn't get through to you. In fact, it might cause resentment. You might block or build up the walls there." And he said, "Sometimes I would see some things in you that you were doing wrong, and I knew I needed to correct it." But he said, "When you got to be a teenager, I learned to take my time a little bit more and look for the opening. Look for the right time, the right place, the right mood sometimes. Because sometimes getting the correction across, you have to catch somebody when they are willing and in the right place." Now, what you can also do is sometimes correct or create the environment in which the mood will be better. Some of the best child-rearing advice I got was from the pastor who was training me back in 1974 and 75 and 76. And he had three boys. And he said, you know, a lot of times when one of my boys is getting out of sorts, when they're just getting cranky or whatever, he said, I've learned the best thing I can do is throw the canoe on top of the truck, take them down to the river and go paddle down the river, just me and him by himself for an hour or so. And he said, we just spend a little time together, and usually by the time we're done, his whole mood has changed. Just spending some time with Dad. And he, you know, I thought, well, that's a pretty good, wise piece of advice. Well, Dad gave me an illustration in this conversation. The Houston Spokesman Club used to meet on Wednesday nights at a YMCA. And the club went in by 9, and then everybody would go to the gym, and we had the gym from 9 to 11 to play basketball. There'd be a whole bunch of men and teenage boys there playing basketball. My dad didn't like basketball. He didn't play basketball. He had to get up early in the morning to go to work. But most of the time he'd go and he'd sit there on the sidelines for 2 hours because I wanted to play ball. And then when club wasn't going on in the summer, we still had the gym. And most of the time on Wednesday night, we lived 30, 35 minutes away. He'd drive me in, go to the gym, sit there, knowing it's going to be a short night's sleep. And at the time, you know, I really didn't notice. I mean, I was glad, but I wanted to go play ball. And, you know, I didn't understand so much back then the sacrifice that was making. But one of the things he told me, he said, you know, in those times, he said, a lot of times I went when I didn't want to go. He said, I had no interest in going. He said, but I went because I knew when you got out of there, you were usually always in a great mood. You had a good exercise, a good workout, you're with your friends, it's always fun, and you're in a good mood. And he said, then on the way home, he said, that's when we got in some of our best talks. He said, sometimes I would bring up things and you didn't even know I was bringing them up on purpose. He said, but I'd been planning it for a while. I'd bring up something, and he said, sometimes I was correcting you without you even realizing you were being corrected. And at that time, I said, you were? And he goes, oh, yeah. And he said, a lot of that was planned. It was planned. Well, that's called structuring the environment to get the pupil in the best place so that they will learn more effectively. We've said for years at the summer camp program, we try to create what we call the zone. And we've defined the zone as the environment in which God can best change a person's life. Some environments are better for learning than others. The environment at summer camp is better for a child to learn in than it is the environment out on the schoolyard. Create the environment that's conducive for learning. This is where some of the issues about child rearing don't have a formula to them. It's not just cut and dried. It requires a lot of thinking. It requires a lot of planning. It requires knowing the individual child. And children can be so different, it sometimes requires different tactics with different kids. But that's where wisdom comes in for parents. Now, over the years, I've collected a lot of books on child rearing and marriage. I have a couple of shelves worth, and some of them are very good. If you could only have one book on child development, though, what would it be? If you could only have one book on child development, what would it be? You know, there was a time when it was not common to have very many books in the home. In fact, most homes didn't have many. What did good parents do before they had all these good books today available to them? What in the world could they have done back then to be a good parent? Well, the one book that most homes did have was the Bible. If the only book that you ever had was a Bible, you would be well equipped to build a family. You'd be well equipped. But I often think and wonder if we use it enough. There are so many articles, there's so many books out there. It's so easy to lean more maybe on human understanding. And not that some of them are not worth the paper they're written on, but others are quite good. But they can't take the place. Of all the books that I have on my shelves, I don't stand in reverence or awe of any of them. There's not a book on my shelf. No matter how good they are, no matter how much I've quoted from some of them and used that material, I don't stand in reverence or awe of any of them. There's only one that you stand in reverence and awe of, and it's because these contain the words of God. The words of God. When you examine this book, you will find in the Bible that you see that it employs several different types of teaching. The Bible itself, God Himself, employs several types of teaching. You have doctrinal teaching, which is simply explanations of facts, of the conditions as they are. The word doctrine literally means teaching. These are doctrines on issues. You also have in the Bible historical teaching. In other words, we have accounts from history that are designed also to teach us lessons of life. We have in the Bible parables and stories about other people's lives. Some of them are true, some of them are parables that are not true, but they are good stories that are used to teach and to offer examples. You have another, it's related to parables and historical, and that is experiences. You ever read the book of Psalms, and you're reading through some of David's writings, and you say, yeah, I identify with that feeling. I've been there. I've experienced what it's like to be down in the dumps. I've experienced what it's like to be so happy and thrilled about something. I see what he's saying here. That's a part of teaching. And a fifth area that you have are the Proverbs of the wise. Now, what book in the Bible would you consider one of the best sources as a teacher's guide for training children? What book in the Bible? Well, I would propose that if you only had the Bible and you were seeking guidance as a parent for teaching your children, you would find yourself in the book of Proverbs on a regular basis. You'd find yourself in the book of Proverbs on a regular basis. But how many people today in this world seriously use Proverbs regularly as a foundation for child rearing and family and general life skills development? I would urge you to do so, to study Proverbs regularly as a teaching tool for children. As a teaching tool for children. If you do, one of the themes that will quickly jump out at you is the need for the teacher to first accumulate wisdom. You can't teach wisdom if it's not there. So the teacher must accumulate wisdom. And then closely followed that is going to be a related theme in the book of Proverbs, and that is the obligation to pass on what you've learned. The obligation to pass on what you've learned. And you will find that when you go to the book of Proverbs, God focuses greatly on teaching wisdom. Teaching wisdom. It's not hard to do a word search on the words wise and wisdom in the Bible either. Wisdom in the Bible, you will find that word 222 times. You will find the word wise 237 times. Approximately 460 times in the Bible, you will find this stressed. That's a lot of emphasis on a quality of life. And then certain concepts jump out in terms of importance. Let's go to Proverbs 4 and verse 5. Proverbs 4. Proverbs 4, 5. There are a few phrases in the Bible that are so directly and forcefully stated as this. Two words with an exclamation point. Get wisdom. Get wisdom. Get understanding. There is a sense of urgency here. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. He doesn't say, look, whatever you do, you've got to understand calculus and trig. You've got to understand world history. You've got to understand the sciences. Those things are important. Those things are available, whatever you want to say. It doesn't say, don't get those things. And there's a place for getting it. But none of those things will affect your quality of life. The life that you're going to live. They won't guide your life. Verse 7, wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. What does James 1:5 say? If anybody lacks wisdom, what? Go to God and ask for it. Then He'll give it. But how is He going to give it? He will give it to you through some work, through some digging. There is so much wisdom here. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and all you're getting, get understanding. Okay, that's a fine statement, but why? Why? Why this stress? Why is it so important? So that, number one, it's for yourself. Every parent begins to understand the need for wisdom because you find out, as I said earlier, there's no easy formula to child rearing. It's like the guy said, when I was a bachelor and I was thinking about it, I had no kids and I had six theories about child rearing. Now I have six kids and no theories. It's not that simple. Now, parents need wisdom daily because children's needs that arise usually don't allow us to take a time out and say, well, give me a week to research this and I'll come back and we'll figure out how to handle it. It seldom works that way. It's usually some decision that's demanded quickly, on the spot, or with a shorter time to think about it. As one mother said, I would love to be the ideal mom, but I'm too busy raising kids. Life is just happening so fast, but we have to do this. But number two, the second importance of getting wisdom is in order to pass it on. The Sansino commentary says this about the Proverbs. They urge the fundamental thesis that the morally defective and willfully perverted stand in their own light, deny themselves the real joys of living, bring avoidable troubles upon their head, and though at times they may have a momentary triumph, they will ultimately fail. On the other hand, to conduct oneself in the light of wisdom means to get the best out of life, to discover sources of strength which assure the final victory over calamity and evil, and become a blessing to oneself and society. In other words, wisdom puts you so far ahead of the game. In turn, we go back to that law of consequences. Isn't that what we want to see in our children? That they discover sources of strength, they get the best out of life, they know how to conduct themselves in a manner which brings that, they are assured final victory over calamity and evil and become a blessing to themselves and society. That's what we want. That is having it better than we had it. Sansino also says, no phase of human relationship seems to be overlooked. He's talking about the book of Proverbs. No phase of human relationship seems to be overlooked. The king on his throne, the tradesman in his store, the farmer in the field, husband and wife and child, all receive wholesome instruction and exhortation. Advice is tendered on the treatment of friends, the poor, the rearing of children, the snares which lurk in the path of youth, the perils of overconfidence and self-commitment by standing surety for others. These and other contingencies provide occasion for shrewd counsel based on the central doctrine that wisdom is, and he quotes Proverbs 3:18, wisdom is a tree of life to those who lay hold upon her, and happy is everyone that holds her fast. Wisdom is a tree of life. Let's see, where else have we read about a tree of life? The tree of life has to do with the process of salvation and eternal life. And in the process of salvation and eternal life, it comes back down to the way we live, doesn't it? It's responding to God, living in a godly way, and wisdom is so critical there. We see this emphasized in so many other places in the Bible. Now I have a question for you, though. What is wisdom? What is wisdom? How would you define it? Well, probably the simplest and most straightforward definition of wisdom that we would put in a spiritual sense is the ability to make godly choices in life. It's the simplest definition I can think of. I didn't think of it entirely. I looked at a whole bunch of definitions. the ability to make godly choices in life. That's the core of wisdom. And that is so pervasive in every day of life. Let's go to Colossians chapter 3. We find this in Proverbs and we find it in Paul's writings. Sometimes we may overlook this one little phrase here that is really so important to being able to fulfill what Paul was writing about in terms of the way to live. Colossians chapter 3, verse 16, Colossians 3:16. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly. And it doesn't stop there, because to stop there would place some degree of limitation on it. I've known people who could quote scripture left and right, who had the word of God memorized for places, and they knew all sorts of facts and figures about it. But this part was missing. Let it dwell in you richly in all wisdom. If we don't apply it, the word of God, to the ability to make godly choices in life, all the knowledge in the world is going to be limited. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. And whatever you do, that's a pretty broad statement, whatever you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. That requires wisdom. Everything we do, wow. Well, what we do is what we choose. We do what we choose to do, and wisdom gets back to the ability to make godly choices. And then it immediately goes into, Paul immediately begins writing about one of the areas in life that requires the most wisdom. Verse 18, wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord. The big S word. Submit. That's a tough one. Wisdom? Biggie. That's a big one. Husbands, the big L word, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them. Wisdom? Hey, we can have knowledge all day long. Knowledge says, yep, submit, love, obey, don't provoke. That's knowledge. Wisdom, though, is knowing how to do it. Knowing how to do it. We can know what verse 18 and 19 says, but knowing how to make the right choice is the big one. That determines the actions of the day. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. See, a child needs wisdom. Age appropriate. Age that they're capable of doing, but can a child be wise? Relatively speaking to other children, yes. A properly trained child can be learning how to do things correctly. Fathers, do not provoke your children. That is, again, there's no formula. That's a wisdom issue. That's a wisdom issue. I have to know my child. I have to know myself. I have to know what works and doesn't work. I have to understand what is going on. Lest they become discouraged. What if they do become discouraged? How to get them out of that is a wisdom thing. Wisdom is so important. How many family problems in life have come from a lack of wisdom? You look back and you say, well, yeah, I see how this mess started. It was a lack of wisdom. Not making godly choices. How many relationship problems stem from a lack of wisdom? Look at chapter 4 and verse 5. Paul repeats it. Chapter 4 and verse 5. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. How many relationship problems have stemmed from my lack of wisdom in speaking and dealing with people or properly responding to people? Wisdom has so much to do with controlling one's direction in life, with controlling the decision-making processes that we make every day. And because it is real and not theory, it's not just somebody's philosophical ideas, wisdom is very practical. It's something that exists when a person thinks and then acts according to the truth on the choices that are being demanded of us. The Bible makes it very clear that some people have more wisdom than others. And you can't help but wonder how much of that has to do with devoting oneself to getting it. Wisdom doesn't just happen. It can be attained, it can be gotten, it can be learned, and it can be taught. But one of the great goals of child rearing is to teach wisdom. So back to the question that I asked you at the beginning of the sermon. Where do you foresee your child will need wisdom? That's a very important question to ask in life. And once you have identified it, then the next question is, okay, how do I help them get it? How do I help them get it? How can I prepare them to learn how to make good choices in life? How can I help them build their wisdom quotient, their WQ? WQ is more important than IQ. The wisdom quotient is more important than the intelligence quotient. And that's something that only you can give as a godly parent, because in the world, our kids are in a society that values three major things: beauty, brains, and personality. Those are the great cultural values today. And those things are not necessarily bad, but you don't hear much about wisdom being talked about in the circles today about rearing our children. Proverbs emphasizes WQ. That's what Proverbs is dealing with. And that makes a lot of sense. I've known for years a young man who has Down syndrome. But this young man was raised by his parents very well. And I've always been amazed at that young man, of how he's pretty perceptive on some spiritual issues. And I remember a few years ago, we were standing at church one day and we were talking about a problem that existed. And this young man had been trained to obey God and trained to respect God. And he had certain discernment. And as we were talking about that, he listened and made a few comments, and finally he said, "Well, it's simple. That's not right. That's just not right." And you know, he got to the crux of the problem. I've seen him obey God and have a healthy, balanced fear of God, where other people who had a much greater advantage physically did some really stupid things to mess up their lives. His analysis was very simple. That's not right. You don't do it. It was just, he cut right through it. It's not right. You don't do it. I thought, wow. That doesn't come by accident, though. It comes through hard work. And his parents, I know what kind of work they put into him. And you see that later. You will always see the fruits of wisdom come out. You can't fake wisdom. There are some things in life you can fake, at least temporarily. A person can fake care. A person can fake love temporarily. But you can't fake deep. You can't fake deep. Can't fake wisdom. It's either there or it isn't. And we get it through work. There's a great potential in the book of Proverbs to guide a person's life, and that's why God put it here. Our job as parents is translate it from the book into the child. Get it from the book to the child. Now, we can't do that by saying, "Here, kid, read this." That won't do it. That's not going to be the way to do it. Proverbs was not designed just to give information. When you read the book of Proverbs and think of it for parents as a teacher's guide, it's a model of what to talk about. And therefore, it is not meant just to be a bunch of verses that we memorize. They are conversation starters, is really what they are. They are principles to start with that lead us into what teaching is all about. The Proverbs offer a model of what to talk about and how to talk about it. They offer both. You will see in the book of Proverbs teaching techniques: repetition, compare and contrast, advantage, disadvantage, foresight, understanding consequences. Those are all great teaching techniques. You will never find in the book of Proverbs the assumption that everybody understands. You'll never find the assumption that everybody understands. It is given, as Moses was saying, as when he talked to the children of Israel, they were adults, but he did not assume that they got it all. He said, I will teach you. Samuel said, I will teach you. Proverbs says, I will teach you. Never assume your children understand just because they come to church. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that is made over time. I'm going to have to skip about 3-4 pages here, but I'll come to another time. But I would like to come to something else right now. I'd like for you to write down 6 short words or phrases. 6 short words or phrases. Number one is skills. Just write this down, skills. And by skills, I mean specific physical skills: cooking, painting, changing the oil in the car, gardening, managing money, whatever. Number two is responsibilities. Responsibilities. The jobs that are not skilled jobs, but things that need to be done for the smooth operation of society. In the family society, it's things like, you know, taking out the trash, washing the dishes, walking the dog, things that have to be done, whether it's a big or small thing. Number three, character traits. Number four, relationships. Number five, emotional control. And number six, God's way of life. Now, I want you to take some time and I want you to prioritize these from 1 to 6, with 1 being the most important to 6 being the least important. I'm going to give you 2 seconds to figure out number 1. I'll get you started. God's way of life. Number 1. Now, arrange the rest of them in the order of what you think is the most important. And we would probably be pretty close on this. Some of these are more important than others, but which of these areas is not essential to teach a child? Which is not essential to teach a child? These are all life skills. If a person does poorly in any one of these areas, they're going to have some problems and challenges in life. So all 6 of these areas are areas that need to be taught to children. Now, what's the plan? What is the plan for instilling these qualities in those that you teach? How can you teach these life skills to your children to give understanding of the way life works and how to make right choices in it? I want to give you something today that I hope will be a practical tool. So whoever the ushers are who are passing out the handouts, you have a handout coming. This handout is not going to teach you how to do all these things. It's not going to tell you how to teach. It's going to start even more simple than that. While they're handing them out, if you're old enough to be listening with interest to this, you're old enough to have a handout. So I don't know how many we have here today. If we have, I think we have about 60 handouts, so we should be able to cover everybody. I mean, if you're 10 years old and you're listening to this, you're not too young to start thinking about family. Start building foundational concepts. This handout is titled very simply, Preparing My Child for Life. I must teach, and fill in the blank, your child's names, these things before he or she turns 18. I must teach little Cadwallader these things before he or she turns 18. This is going to start even more fundamental than how to teach. It's going to give us a fundamental part of the lesson plan, because we have to start with, what is it that I need to teach? What do I need to teach my child? This is, if you will, a type of lesson plan. There are many different types, but this is a fundamental overview of topics that need to be taught. And it's a, what it is, as it says at the top, this is intended for use as a basic template to give ideas to parents as you construct your own personal to-do list for your children. Dee and I brainstormed together some time ago to come up with this list. And during this project, it turned into one of those, if I had it to do over again, exercises. Now, that's not to say that we didn't think of all these things when we were raising our children, but I wished that I would have had a concrete teaching plan in my hands to refer to often. We tried to teach a lot of things. We tried to teach what we knew. But looking back on it now, I didn't teach my children everything I wished I had. And I didn't teach them all the things that I wished I had in the way that I wished I would have taught them. And probably every parent looks back and thinks the same thing. So this isn't everything they need to know. This is not the end-all statement. That's why you will see blanks and extra bullets at the end of each section. Those are for you to fill in. And by the way, if you would like this document sent to you on email as a Word document so you can edit it and add and things like that, just send me a note and I'll send it to you. In fact, I would encourage it. The spiritual section at the first may be the shortest, but it is the most important, obviously. These are planned ways to speak of God's way that we read about in Deuteronomy 6. This is a template. Please, if you use this, develop your own additional things to it. So it goes through emotional and spiritual skills to develop. And that deals with spiritual skills, character, and personality traits. It lists positive character traits and it lists negative character traits. These are things that are designed to help you look at your children, ask where are they stronger, where are they weaker, and how can I help them overcome their weaknesses and build on their strengths. It doesn't tell you how to do it. It is giving you something to consider to do. On page 2, toward the bottom, we have physical skills to develop. How to maintain a household, how to take care of yourself, how to manage food, how to manage money, how to take care of children, how to take care of animals, how to take care of a car, how to enjoy and appreciate the outdoors, talent skill development, educational skills, social skills. These are all things that children need to know, but if we don't have a plan, some of these things may fall through the cracks as they get older. This is a tool. It's something that you'll have to digest later. I have a few suggestions for follow-up. Once you have established your own list, you've added things to it, and it should be a working document all the time. Once you've established your list or looked at this list, through your own study, start putting Proverbs and other scriptures to these sections. Start jotting down the scriptures that apply to each. The next step is to start adding your stories, your anecdotes, your illustrations, your examples that support and amplify. If you think of an example, make a note of it. You may put a note down, I'm going to use that someday when I teach my child this or that. It may not be something that you would teach them at age 3, but you may make a note there, I want to tell them this story when they're maybe 5 or 6 years old that I can use to teach. In other words, start building your own reservoir of knowledge while you think about it. Real life stories and illustrations and anecdotes make for some of the most effective and enjoyable teaching for the teacher and the student alike. For grandparents, Kids love nothing more than stories. They love stories, and they are effective. Perfect the art of storytelling. It's a great teaching tool. A third suggestion is plan then for the age-appropriate levels of teaching these things, and then go back and revisit them later as they mature. When you take some of those areas, well, basically when you take all of them, you will approach it in a different way when they're 4 years old than when they're nine. We go back, we revisit, we go back over these things. You take that area on personality traits, say weaknesses. How many of us, whether we are 40 or 80, are still working on some of those things? So don't expect at age 5 to explain it to the kid and say, okay, check that one off, never have to teach that one again. No, we have to go back to it. We have to go back to it and revisit it later. Keep notes. Keep notes on what you have covered in these areas, because it'll help you keep track. You may sit down later and say, wow, you know, I haven't really covered this. I need to plan on bringing that up sometime soon. I need to go to work on making sure they have this. Another suggestion, share this and your ideas with other people. We have such a great resource here. We have so many families. Share information. Talk with each other about some of these things. And another related point is to ask others for advice. Ask people for ideas. How did you approach this? I need to talk with this about my child. Have you ever run into this? And what did you do? Or how would you go about it? Get some small groups and talk about these things. It would probably be very stimulating. And especially the older, more experienced people among us. Timothy says the older women are to teach the younger, but it's a lot easier for them to do that when they're asked. When the younger come and ask, it makes it a lot easier for the older to teach them. Great resource. I hope this is a practical, and I hope it's a helpful tool. Use it, add to it. When you have other ideas come to mind, send them to me. I want this to be something that I add on to over time. I want to expand this list. You may look at it and be overwhelmed by it, saying, man, I have to teach all that. Well, yeah, you do. It's not supposed to be overwhelming. It's supposed to be identifying fundamental things that need to be taught. And I'd ask you to do one more thing. And that is, after services today, just look around and observe the children here. Just take a look, and not just today, but all the time. We have this old saying, children should be seen and not heard. And that's right, but we often talk about the last part, and we forget the first part. Children should be seen. Children should be seen. Look at them, and just consider, these little ones here are going to be graduating from high school before we know it. They're going to be out the door. Look at the young adults here. And those of you who have been around a while, you can think, wasn't it just yesterday they were little tykes? Life goes by quickly. Time flies by. We need to number our days and plan how we will use that time to teach the life skills they need. If you cover these things and teach the way God teaches and teach the things that He tells us are the most important, we will see a next generation that grows up as wise and discerning children who know how to walk with God.